This is Fresh Air. In a column called Art and Politics, Dennis Johnson has been writing about war for Esquire magazine. Johnson is a poet and novelist who recently filed stories on Liberia and the Gulf. His fiction was described by the writer Jonathan Dee as having a disquieting ability to get inside the souls of his spiritually disoriented characters as they move along the dark edges of society. An editor at the New York Times Book Review described Johnson as one of our most inventive and unpredictable novelists. Johnson's novel The Stars at Noon is about a down-and-out American trapped in Nicaragua in 1984. Fiscadoro is about the nuclear end of the world. Farrar, Straus, and Giroux has just published Johnson's new novel, The Resuscitation of a Hanged Man. I asked the poet and novelist why he's been reporting on war.
You know, I think there are a lot of levels on which to answer that question. And, the most rational one is simply that I have a belief that somebody with genuine talent for words ought to be present in places like that and kind of mediating those experiences for us. That we're obligated, those of us who think, maybe swell-headedly that we have a talent ought to go and write about those things. But I think there's also another level which is a little murkier and harder to talk about, and that's just, maybe it's not very attractive. But I think there's just a desire to be where that kind of thing is happening and to see it. Maybe it's voyeuristic.
Well, I wonder what kind of psychological need it fulfills. I mean, there's almost like a death wish at the heart of a lot of your writing.
I don't say that. I don't buy that at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think there's certainly an awareness of death, but it's not a death wish. I think there's more of a life wish in a way in wanting to be it where there's a little bit of danger and chaos. There's a feeling of being more alive, and more fully alive when that sort of thing is happening. When I was in Monrovia last fall, there was a situation where we were actually being shot at, and it was very exciting, and knowing that it wasn't going to last very long and that I would be able to go home soon made it fun almost. It made me feel as if, it was that sort of thing that Churchill talked about, there's nothing more exhilarating than being shot at to no effect.
So I guess in a way you have to be careful about this kind of journalism not becoming a self-indulgent exercise.
Exactly, yeah. And I think if I were to do much more of it, then I'd have to say that's what it would be. I'm more interested now in getting into writing about things that are not quite warlike. I'd like to write about people who are interested in UFOs and people who worship Elvis Presley, people who are weirdly religious.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe I just want to enlarge my own understanding of what it means to worship.
No, I'm wondering when you go to a place for a short period of time to write about it, if you're ever satisfied that you really understand what you're seeing.
It depends on what you're looking for. I went to Nicaragua, for example, several years ago, and I had an idea that I would write an article about it. But I'd only been there a couple of days before it was clear to me that I was never going to understand the political situation well enough to say anything worth hearing about it. And in fact, I was afraid there was a danger somebody might take me seriously. They might think I did know what I was talking about. So I ended up only writing fiction out of that visit. If it comes to trying to explain what people are about politically, going to some place for a couple of weeks is really not worth the trip. But I'm actually just interested in the sights and the sounds of places and what people have to say about themselves. And I believe I'm qualified to do that.
Your new novel, Resuscitation of a Hanged Man, is about a man who moves to Provincetown after a failed attempt at suicide by hanging. And I guess I want to start with this novel by asking you why you start there, why after the failed attempt at death.
I think the novel began my writing of it, my thinking about it, began many years ago with an actual historical event where a guy named Skaggs was hung in, Nebraska for murder, and some doctors brought some galvanic batteries to the hanging and charged him up again, got him going a little bit. His heart was beating and so on. And This was reported in the New York Times. The guy was not actually revived, but there were some signs of life that they managed to, get going in him. And it was reported in the New York Times. I read about it in an 1870s New York Times, and it was titled Resuscitation of a Hanged Man. And I liked that title. And that was actually the image in the event, the idea that someone would be hanged and then brought back to life. That kind of got me thinking about that. And then as I started writing about this private eye and knowing that he was going to have an interest in this man, I began to sense that in his past he had done something similar. So it was not the first thing I knew about this character. First I knew that he was in Provincetown and that he had a job in a radio station and that he was a part-time private eye's assistant. And then gradually some of his history kind of came to me.
Well, you mentioned that he has a part-time job at a Provincetown radio station on Cape Cod. And for very self-indulgent reasons, I'd like to ask you to read a paragraph about what it was like for him to work at this radio station, this small provincial radio station part-time.
Okay. Essentially, on the production end of things, at WPRD, he did just what he'd been doing in the cold midnights outside Marla Baker's windows. He taped other people's conversations. But now he was right in the room with them. They saw him. He was no spy. After they went away, he edited out embarrassing slips of the tongue and overlong silences, dubbed themes and intros and outros onto either end, and tossed down the reels in the special program's in-basket. English found it all pretty dull stuff. Half-hour chats between WPRD's big-yawn personalities and their baldly uninteresting guests, who happened to be goofball artists, authors of books about birds and clams, or has-beens the listener would be surprised to learn were not yet dead. Sometimes English helped train new staff arrivals. These had to be frequent in order to keep up with the departures.
That's great. What made you think about the station? What made you want to write about a station like this?
Well, I did a little volunteer work at WOMR in Provincetown, and in fact, I don't think they'd be offended if I, said frankly and openly that everything that's written about the radio station in this book is, true about what WOMR was like in its very early days.
This is a very small community station, which just about everybody is a volunteer.
Yeah, it was an all-volunteer and so on, and of course, there was a lot of struggling as it got on its feet, And that's the era that I use as the model for this radio station.
And you make the comparison here, since the guy's a private investigator part-time and a radio station person part-time, that he's kind of recording conversations.
Yeah, legitimately for the radio station. And then, he thinks it's a little unethical that he does this thing without people knowing it as a private eye.
You haven't worked as a private eye, have you?
Never have, no.
Tell me what the truth infantry is.
Well, in the book, it's what it actually turns out to be is a group of Vietnam veterans who get together and talk and have target practice and just are kind of healing up and associating with one another after returning from Vietnam. But in his mind, as Leonard English, the hero of this novel, goes after the Truth Infantry to find out more about them, he believes they're a vast right-wing conspiracy that may be responsible for the death of a missing person who he's seeking. And he begins to ascribe, I think, more and more powers and, in his imagination to this group.
Does that kind of paranoid conspiracy theory tie into your interests in people who worship Elvis Presley and believe in UFOs?
Yeah, sure. I think there's a murky area where, we're not crazy, but if we think too much, things begin to take on a shape that's not quite discernible to the average person. And I believe there are a lot of us who just, we think a lot about the death of President Kennedy or right-wing conspiracies or left-wing conspiracies, and they begin to take on sinister proportions in our minds. And the same is true, I think, if you're looking for something to worship and you have always liked, say, Elvis Presley, just as an example, it might not be long before he begins to seem some kind of a savior and have powers to influence us even after he's dead. And this is what we believe of saints as well. These are people who are spiritually blessed enough to be able to help us after they're dead, and we can pray to the saints for intercession and for miracles and so on.
My guest is poet and novelist Dennis Johnson. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer Dennis Johnson is my guest.
Your first book, The Incognito Lounge, was dedicated to the people I have lied to. That was your first book of poems. Your first novel, Angels, was dedicated to HP and to those who have shared their experience, strength, and hope. It sounds like you had therapy in between those two dedications.
Well, actually, no. I think the dedication was I got off drugs and alcohol in the late 70s. And at that time, I felt kind of lonely doing that. But now it appears that there's quite a bit of that happening. The dedication to people I've lied to was written after I became chemically free. And it was, you know, written in the consciousness that I had, you know, done quite a bit of lying and, you know, wreaked quite a bit of havoc, I think, in people's personal lives, people who were connected to me. And it was something on the order of an apology, I suppose, and maybe a bit of a cop-out, too, as if I could make everything all better just by... you know, kind of a general shotgun penance written at the beginning of a book. But anyway, it wasn't that anything had happened between those two dedications, in answer to your question.
What kind of lying would you do?
Well, just the usual kind. I mean, I think I was addicted to, well, everything, I suppose. But it was necessary for me to do... You know, just a lot of lying in order to acquire what I needed to stay high, and then on another level, it was increasingly necessary for me to be dishonest with myself in order to keep doing something that was clearly and obviously harmful to me. And I think eventually, a person gets to the point where up is down and black is white, and night is day, and that's another kind of lying. And so I'm included in that group of people I've lied to.
How did you get off drugs and alcohol?
I was in, you know, a few detoxes and hospitals and things like that in the late 70s. And eventually in Phoenix, Arizona, I was in a place called Maverick House, which is a treatment center where they have group therapy and education and so on about addiction. I was there for 16 days. And since I got out, I've been... engaged in a daily program of keeping clean and sober.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the hallucinations you experienced in the days you got high a lot affected what you wanted to get out of your writing? The intensity of it.
What do you mean by affected it?
Well, I mean, I wonder if you're going for a state of heightened intensity in your writing ever, the kind of thing that you once experienced with the help of drugs.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of what I'm aiming for, maybe what you're talking about, is just a sense that the world is very poetic as I experience it. And, you know, you can just open a door and there'll be a world of fire and chaos on the other side. And you could shut that door and open another and, you know, all the sweetness and light. And that this is a world with doors that open into other worlds. And I think that's something I experienced by, you know, messing up my head a lot in the 60s and 70s. And it's something that stayed with me, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad perception to have.
Well, Dennis Johnson, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Writer Dennis Johnson, his new novel is Resuscitation of a Hanged Man. This is Fresh Air.